Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 241, recorded December 29, 2011. The year's best and worst. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Ford, featuring available sync with My Ford Touch. Sync with My Ford Touch gets you to your destination with integrated turn-by-turn directions and directional arrows displayed on screen. Check it out in the new 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/Windows. Well, hello, happy new year. It's time for Windows Weekly. Mary Jo Foley, Paul Thurrott. I hope you had a happy holiday, and we're going to do a live show this week, which is most of the shows are in reruns, but no, you guys said we want to do it fresh. Hey, Leo, Paul.
Why do I look like I have jaundice?
Let me see. I don't know why, Paul.
That looks better. That looks
That's
okay.
better. We'll leave you there. You know, I'll tell you why you have jaundice. It's Jeff Jarvis's fault. Yesterday we did this.
I think I could trace it back.
It's all everything. I set the screen because Jeff is so white. He's like the whitest man in showbiz.
And I'm pretty damn white, but
you're. How about that?
Oh,
That's better. That's movie mode. All right. Yeah. So for those of you listening at home, he's not green. It's just your imagination.
It's like I ate too many carrots or something.
They say in the Steve Jobs biography, it says that Jobs at one point was on an all-carrot diet for many weeks and turned orange. But then we interviewed his college roommate at the time, and Dan said, no, that never happened. So
that's weird, because I would trust anything that came out of that guy's mouth. I'm surprised.
That's apocryphal.
Surprised to hear that.
Yes. So our year-ender, I actually enjoy doing year-ender shows because it's a chance to sit back, relax, and enjoy a look back at what happened the year. And more importantly, I think kind of think about it and what it all means and where we're going. So I'm glad you wanted to do this this year instead of just kind of a best
very time. Reflective. I would have just said, like, what the hell was that?
What's this? let's start. We're going to go through the 10 and worst and best things at Microsoft that happened this year. But before we do, I'd like to ask both of you, if you could summarize the year, was this on balance a positive growth, good year for Microsoft, or a year in which Microsoft struggled a little bit? Paul?
It's a little bit of both, right? I mean, the one thing I don't think Microsoft gets a lot of credit for is that their core businesses are all generating a ton of money. They're a cash machine.
They are very profitable.
And that they have successfully entered the cloud in some key ways, which will be part of our best of the year list. That, honestly, a couple of years ago, if you had said this stuff was going to be really successful for them, and not just successful from a sales standpoint, but from a technological standpoint, I think a lot of people would have been surprised by that. So that stuff's really good. On the other hand, there are things like Windows, where we're kind of in a holding pattern. We don't know what's going on with the next version. Windows Phone, which is absolutely in a holding pattern, hasn't really gone anywhere from a market share unit sales perspective. And things like IE, which are mixed. You know, we have some of that stuff in both of these lists. So it was a mixed bag, I think. Some good, some bad.
You agree, Mary Jo? What was your take on this year?
Yeah, I'd say a mixed bag too, but I look at it a little bit differently. I feel like this was a good year for Microsoft in terms of building up its reputation as more of a consumer play kind of company. So they had a lot of good stuff around Kinect and Xbox. And if you're like me and you're more of an enterprise person, you are definitely in a holding pattern this year.
Well, you have a unique perspective in that regard.
Yeah, they didn't have a lot to say on the enterprise front this year because next year is going to be the big year for them in the enterprise. All their products are in development for the enterprise right now. And next year, they're going to have a ton of launches of interest to people in business. So for me, it was kind of a quiet year, given I don't do as much on my blog about consumer, but next year is going to be active in business.
It does seem that for old line technology companies, and I would include not only Microsoft, but companies like Google, which have been around 13 years, that this was a difficult, challenging year. Government oversight, you know, Google's finally getting the oversight that Microsoft has had for 10 years. That the business world is changing. Of course, we're in a huge recession. Interestingly, technology companies did not suffer so much from that recession. I think the whole world, the business world, everything is changing thanks to the internet. And we're starting to see this happen very fast. We're seeing mobile take off like crazy. Microsoft a little behind in mobile. This was the year they attended a little. This is the year, though, that they started to catch up. And I think you could make a good, strong case that maybe next year is the year that they do catch up.
We'll see.
We'll see.
I think
Mr.
the biggest
Optimist.
Way to... Mr. Realist. And because you'll never find anyone who loves Windows Phone more than I do.
I know.
Love it. And this is one of those... This is what it must have been like to be a Mac guy in 1993 when Windows was... taking off, and you were saying, but this thing's a ripoff and it stinks. And what, you know, that must have been the reaction, you know. And I have that reaction, I guess, now. So I sort of understand how that feels. But I think, you know, this is something we talked about a lot on the podcast this year is we're kind of in a transition here from a traditional PC computing, which was personal computing, to more of a mobile connected form of computing that involves non-traditional computing devices, you know, tablets and smartphones. And that on the other side of this transition, it's going to be those other devices that represent the majority of what constitutes personal computing. And that these traditional computers will be the minority, the truck, you know, in that Steve Jobs car versus truck equation. And I think that Microsoft's success over the next few years will ultimately be measured in how well they're able to make that transition themselves and whether they're able to, both on the consumer side and on the business side. Well, and, you know, we'll see. That's something that's ongoing. We don't have an answer, but...
Mary Jo, do you think enterprise in a holding pattern this year but has a bright future next year? Or it seems to me Microsoft... You said... I thought it was very interesting that you said Microsoft's growth was as a consumer company this year when it seemed to me... that the enterprise play is Microsoft, except for, well, you got to include Xbox and Windows Phone, which is a consumer product.
True. And you know, if you look at what they've got on tap next year, I just did a post today where I was listing out all the things that are supposed to launch next year. I mean, heavily enterprise-focused. System Center, SQL Server. I mean, it's just an ongoing list of all kinds of enterprise stuff that, you know, they do have a consumer component to them in a lot of cases. You know, how System Center... is going to be able to manage the iPad. But in the end, you know, what's really driving Microsoft, what's fueling Microsoft is still the enterprise products. And those right now are all kind of in final release candidate, test phase, all that kind of thing. So I think next year is going to be a really much more of a banner year for them in terms of getting mind share marketing messages and all that around the enterprise.
Yeah. Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com, Paul Thurrott from the supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. We are going to take a look at the best and the worst of 2011 for Microsoft in just a bit on Windows Weekly. Before we do, though, let's hear from a Ford Motor Company. I was able to, we had some fun with the Ford cars we had a couple of weeks ago. We got a 2012 Fiesta, 2012 Focus, and a 2012 Mustang, which disappeared. The minute it arrived and never came back till it had to go back to Ford, and I never saw it or drove it or even got in it. But we had it. And one of the things we did with it, with all three cars, was take a look at the sink in each car and play with it. And, of course, I often neglect to mention, one of the great things about Ford Sync is its amazing navigational features. So we thought we'd make a little instructional video here. Take a look.
Hey, it's Leo Laporte here for This Week in Tech. You know, you've heard me talk about my 2010 Ford Mustang and how much I love Ford Sync. The folks at Ford have just lent me the new 2012 Ford Focus. And this has got my Ford Touch as well as the Ford Sync and some really nice new features, including Wi-Fi. It's got the Ford services, the Sync services, and App Link, which allows me to play apps right from my phone. I thought I'd take you for a little ride and show you some of the things it can do. Come on.
Let me just show you this screen. I'm going to keep it, I usually keep it on this, the home screen. You see all of this stuff here very easily. But the point is not to look at this screen or even touch the screen. The point is you're driving down the road. You want to keep your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road. But I want to, let's say, find somewhere I'm going to go. So I press this paddle here. That's the signal to get Sync to listen to me. Listen. Street address.
In California, say a street address including the city.
140 Keller Street, Petaluma.
Say a line number.
1. So again, I haven't touched the screen. I haven't done anything except talk to it. I'm going to press this button. Set as destination.
Setting destination.
And we're on our way. But let's say we're lost. We want to go somewhere. Destination POI.
By name or by category?
By name.
POI name.
Jack in the Box. So now it's going to find all the local Jack in the Boxes. But there's a number of them, so I could pick which one I want.
Isn't that nice?
Please choose.
Line 1.
One of 20 Jack in the Boxes in Petaluma.
Setting new destination.
There goes the Steely Dan.
Now we've got a map, and it's going to walk me through it, and we're on our way to Jack in the Box.
The route guidance will start now.
Next time, I'm playing Motorhead. I have to say, I am such a fan. I've been using a Ford Sync for 2 years now in my Mustang, and I just love it, and I want you to check it out.
A couple of comments on the video.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Jack in the Box, seriously? And...
I don't know why that came up. It just for some reason I said that. It must have been Freudian. I don't know. I should have said In and Out.
It's intriguing to me that I've only been to Petaluma twice, and yet I recognize that exact kind of place with the train thing.
Yeah, with the train,
abandoned looking train station.
It is. It's the old.
I know exactly where that is.
It's so weird. It's not a big town. It's the old Petaluma train station, and they've turned it into the Welcome Center. But you're right. That old train, I think they're moving that old train. I think they said, I read in the little town newspaper, the Argus Courier, which is, by the way,
the local middle school.
Yeah, it does sound like that. They're moving that train someday. Yeah. But the train
is on a track. It's on a track.
So it's on a track. You just turn on the engine and you drive off. Simple. So drive a Ford today at your Ford dealer near you. And that's that. We had a little discussion before the show began. What Paul has done and Mary Jo have done is put together a list of the best and worst of Microsoft. And the discussion was, should we begin with the best and end with the worst, which is kind of a downer. But then Mary Jo pointed out, well, if you begin with the worst and end with the best, people get depressed at the beginning of the show, which isn't good.
And they just leave.
So we don't know what to do.
It's a lose-lose.
Let's start with the best. And I got to say, number one on the list, and you put it on the list too, and I would have put it on the list too. Mary Jo joins the show. And we're really glad to have Mary Jo.
I tried to get it out of there, but Mary Jo kept putting it back.
It was that or Hyper-V at the top of the list.
No, thank you. Thank you. Good choice.
Mary Jo's video is frozen.
Yeah, that's all right. She's got a nice look on her face. I think we can just pretend that she's skeptical. So one of two things will happen at this point with Skype. We just don't understand how Skype works and its infinite wisdom.
You'll either come back or she'll disappear.
Exactly. But her voice is still there, and that's all we care about. Okay. So let's start with besides Mary Jo joining the show. And I do like this look of...
Although I just want to point, I mean, for whatever you said, you know, Rich, I don't know how you said it exactly, but, you know, we put this document together. I mean, the truth is, you know, in this case, Mary Jo actually wrote most of this, and that's part of, you know, I wanted, yeah, that's part of why she's here, because I wanted someone else to do all the work.
Yeah. No, because thank you, Mary Jo. Nice job.
No, I mean, I think it's easy to get complacent and and protective, you know, whatever of things that you do, but I wanted to involve someone else and someone I liked and trusted and someone who I think, you know, brings something very valuable to the show. Yeah. So just,
well,
you know, thank you for joining, and I'm glad she's here.
Yeah, and I might add the enterprise perspective, which
I willfully ignore.
Both of us willfully. You've attempted in the past to...
Leo, I've been associated with Windows IT Pro, now owned by Penton for 12 years-ish, very much an enterprise company, but I've always really pushed the personal computing angle myself.
Right.
As much as I can.
So you actually know about enterprise computing, or you just hiding?
Yeah, I do. And I it's like I know this dirty secret, and I promise not to share it with anybody. You know, and sometimes it comes out.
Well, anyway, it's good to have kind of, I think, especially as Microsoft, I think, expands its role in the enterprise. I mean, it's always been a big enterprise company, but I think it's looming larger and larger in Microsoft's overall portfolio, which is interesting because as we said at the beginning of this show, there's a lot of growth in the consumer side as well. And it's almost two different companies. Where have we heard this before?
Two or three.
Or yes. Five.
Yeah.
Or five. Yeah. So some number that's not one.
Yes.
Let's agree that it's that.
So one.
Somebody else doesn't agree with us on that, Steve Ballmer.
But, yeah. Sure. Well, yeah. I think it's his job to say, no, we're one company.
Yeah, but that's the cold hands, warm heart theory of mine, which is, you know, the person who came up with it had really cold hands. So, you know, the person who is running Microsoft, of course, is going to say, Microsoft is better off as a single company because it's in his personal best interest to say that.
Yeah. Well, what is he going to say?
It would be hard for that person, whoever he is, to decide otherwise. Although I guess that guy from HP, what's the person's name?
Leo Apotheker?
Leo Apotheker.
Jeez.
He apparently thought differently. And see what happens?
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. There were a couple of CEOs in the running for worst CEO of 2011.
Yeah.
And I think Leo Apotheker, clearly.
I don't know, clearly.
The two guys.
The CEOs of RIM are.
The two guys right at RIM. It took two guys to make half a brain.
And whoever is running Yahoo these days, I believe it's the guy who plays Ronald McDonald in those McDonald's commercials. I don't know
Jack
his name.
In the Box.
Yeah.
It's Jack. You know, that's actually not a bad idea. I think he'd probably do a better job. They need somebody with a big head and a round nose. So,
guy who played Mr. Hooper on Sesame Street.
At this rate, we're not going to get through all of these. So let's move right along. After Mary Jo joining Windows Weekly, which is the best thing that happened all year, number two, kept Kinect relevant. What did you mean by that, Mary Jo?
Well, this is actually one of Paul.
All right. But,
We both were thinking, you know, it would have been easy for Microsoft to kind of just say, okay, Kinect's out there. We'll throw a few more games out there and that's it. But instead, they really made Kinect more central to a lot of different things. With the whole new Xbox dashboard update, now you can use the Kinect to navigate that. They're talking about having a Kinect sensor for Windows so that on the PC you'll have a different piece of hardware that'll let you interact with gestures and all right, you know, in front of your PC. You won't need to be so far away like you do with the Kinect for the living room. So they're doing a lot of things to kind of keep Kinect fresh in people's minds, talking about business applications, you know, like healthcare and retail. They didn't just let it sit there, which they could have done. And, you know, knowing the way Microsoft markets, sometimes they might have done, if you think of how they've done other things in the past. So, yeah, they really kept it front of mind, kept talking it up, kept talking about the numbers of Kinects that were sold. So I think they did well with that.
Yeah. And actually, here's the joke. Kinect is almost completely worthless, and yet everyone's convinced it's the greatest thing in the world. You know, here's an example of Microsoft actually having something that isn't all that impressive, and people are very taken with it. Whereas here on the other side of the fence, we have things like Windows Phone, which is really impressive, and no one is taken with this thing. And so it's very interesting to me. You know, the current version of Kinect is very limited, and yet it seems to have generated some measure of excitement. I mean, the other thing I'd point out is just when you talk about volume businesses, and in Microsoft's Xbox 360 is arguably the only clearly successful consumer-oriented product they've ever had, you know, other than, say, Windows on the desktop. You know, Mike, they've only sold like 60 million of these things.
Oh, wow.
In
only?
Well, no, hold on. 60 million units in, what, 6 years? Six years. So an average of 10 million a year. They sell twice as many number of copies of Windows 7 every month. So in 6 years, they've sold 60 million. You know, there will be 350 million 380 million PCs sold this year. There will be some hundreds of millions of smartphones, and there will be some tens of millions of tablets. And yet, for some reason, the Xbox 360 is seen as this amazing market. Next year, they will probably sell, the hardware makers, well over 60 million tablets. But Microsoft sold that many. It took six years to sell that many. Why is that such a huge success story?
Yeah.
It's an amazing story because in that
especially
market,
since they lose money on every one, right?
No, actually, I don't believe that they do.
They don't make a lot of money.
Yeah, I don't know how much they make. The model for the second console, the 360, was that it would be designed in such a way that it would make money
over
time.
It could be profitable. Yeah.
The first one they lost billions on.
Yeah.
The second one.
So in that way, not selling more than 60 million is good.
Yeah, because the less you sell, the more you
lose. Well, anyway, they make money on the games.
This is in the pro column because this is an example of something where they're really milking something for all of its worth in a very positive way and getting an amazingly positive reaction in the marketplace. And God, you know, God bless them for that. It's working out really well for them.
This cracks me up. So this isn't the best column, but really it's kind of the best and the worst.
This is what happens when you combine two lists, right?
They did a really good job of putting lipstick on that pig. Yeah.
No. Look.
Let's say what we're talking about here.
certainly the Kinect has outsold the Sony competitor, whatever that's called, the Move or whatever.
Oh, God.
Certainly the Kinect has improved on what was available, say, with the Wii in some ways. Although I would argue that having to hold something makes certain actions more realistic. So, for example, if you want to emulate a golf swing,
right,
it having actually makes some sense. You would hold something like a golf club and you know, do that swing. That almost, I don't want to say it's superior, but for that experience, it's probably a little bit better. But just for the sake of argument, let's say certainly the technology itself, a step above what was available.
I actually like Dance Central and games like that. It works well with the Kinect. But that's a unique style of game. I wouldn't want to play, say, Star Wars with it.
This is that transition thing we were talking about earlier, because what we're looking at is something that's right at the beginning of something more important. If you think about Minority Report and that style of computing in the sci-fi future, you can sort of look at this and say, well, this is the first step. When this becomes truly successful is when there isn't an add-on. And by the way, when there isn't a device, it's when this kind of motion control computing and voice control computing is just a pervasive everyday part of life, because it's built into things that are computing devices and surfaces that are all around us. So this is the first step. It's the, you know, it's the Fisher Price version or whatever, but of course it is. It will look silly years down the road. It's all we have today because it's like the Model A, but you know, it will get better.
A couple of thoughts from our chat room. I'll include the chat room a little bit on this because they're not stupid. Curtis, they're like Kinect.
There's a compliment.
Curtis B says, and I think rightly so, I think the main thing is the mind share that the Xbox wins for Microsoft with average consumers. It's something they're actually excited about, and I would agree with that.
It is the one Microsoft product that has an Apple-style devotion to it.
Right. And rightly so. I mean, I think the Xbox is a great product, and and Ba with the Ba says, well, it killed the Wii. The Kinect killed the Wii. I don't know if that's true. I think the Wii killed the Wii.
I think time killed the Wii. By the way, remember, when this generation of consoles is all said and done, Nintendo won with a huge bullet. I mean, it's not even close.
Really? Yeah, in terms of sales.
Yep. They will have been on the market far less time than Microsoft, and they will have outsold them by some dramatic number.
Right. But all of that was in the early years, not in the later years.
No, not the early years, until this year.
Okay.
Well, it was every year until now.
And only recently slowed.
Yeah.
And finally, Jimmy Fowl says, I would pay money to see Leo play Dance Central. No, not going to happen. And you wouldn't. You wouldn't. Trust me.
I just looked it up on Wikipedia. And since we can all agree that Wikipedia is the arbiter of all knowledge.
Always correct.
I will tell you that according to Wikipedia, Nintendo has sold 90 million Wii consoles.
Well, that's not that many more. That's 50% more.
It's that 50% more is a lot. Okay.
But it's not, you know, if you had asked me, okay, first of all, if you'd said how many Xboxes, I would have said 120 million, 150 million. I wouldn't have said 60. So that's a surprise, frankly. And if you'd asked me, Wheeze, I would have said even more than that. So,
but again, I think this helps put the perspective of these markets in
yes
in place. You know,
they're not really as big as the PC market,
or these other markets that are going to be much more important and maybe already are, like in the case
like of the mobile market or the tablet. Yeah,
yep. That's why this stuff is so important. You know, people sometimes ask me, you know, why do you write about the iPhone? Why do you do this? And you know. Because the world's changing, and we don't all, not everyone has to sit in front of a computer with a keyboard to get work done,
right,
or to get anything done. You know, this stuff's changing. It's important to kind of roll with the changes.
Yeah. Number three on our list of bests, Microsoft fixed the Windows Phone update process. Not only did they fix it, they kind of kicked dirt in Android's face. And they have been from day one with Windows Phone, I think.
From a
non-fragmented unity of platform, yeah. And from update. I mean, there are tons of Android phones out there, very few of which have the latest version of Android on them.
Except, yeah. You know, if you look, it's easy to remember what happened. Well, it's easier to forget what happened right at the beginning of this year, which was Nodo, right?
Right.
That was
kind of ugly.
Yeah, bricking phones and all that. You know, so that's why when we're talking about this, we're like, yeah, but they've learned from their mistakes with Mango. And, you know, this is funny because Paul and I were talking about this in the document here. I'm like, they fixed the update process. And Paul's like, mostly fixed it. Not exactly.
Well, we think, but, how do we know they fixed it? I mean, they got it right once.
Yeah, it's only been once.
It's fixed. It's fixed.
I can't see the future. I'm just, you know.
Right.
They learned, right? And this is going back to Android, too. Microsoft was doing the exact same thing with Windows Mobile that Android's doing. They just let the carriers and handset makers do whatever they want, pretty much. And I think they learned from Windows Mobile, you know, we've got to lock down the chassis. We've got to lock down the specs to some degree, or we're going to have complete bedlam. I mean, the phones you couldn't even tell two Windows Mobile phones were Windows Mobile. They look so different.
This is such a complicated issue. This is almost outside the bounds of what we're trying to say in the context of a best and worst list. But just quickly, I would highlight that there's been a discussion in recent days about there's no such thing as Android. There's only Android-compatible phones. You know, that's cute. But the truth is, people run Android phones and they can run Android apps, and it kind of just works for the most part. I mean, I don't think average consumers really care that they're getting version 2.33 or 2.whatever, as long as the phone works and they can get the apps they want. So I think there's that aspect of it. And then it is true that Android is very much like Windows Mobile in that capacity. And Windows Mobile was never updated, right? I don't believe there's a single major instance of a Windows Mobile phone being upgraded from a 5.x version to a 6.x version or whatever. I don't believe that ever happened.
It's a good point.
On the other hand, that does happen with a lot of Android phones. So it's not, you know, it's not exactly the same as far as how it's happened in the real world. But maybe that's because they sell so many more of them and people demand it. I don't know. The big thing to me is Microsoft made these decisions, and it may have harmed Windows Phone in ways that we didn't anticipate. Charlie Kindle talked about that this week in a blog post, a former Microsoft executive. You know, he said that Microsoft basically extended a middle finger to the hardware makers and to the carriers by seizing control of the hardware spec and of the updating process from those companies respectively, but that by doing so, it may have harmed the adoption of the platform where it matters most in the beginning by the companies that are going to make the hardware and then by the companies that are going to sell it. And so Android, by not putting up any blockers for anything, that's one of many ways it's established itself as the go-to platform. And Microsoft, by trying to do the right thing for consumers, may in sort of an ironic way have harmed the platform because it doesn't get adopted as much. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a...
Because the phone companies don't want to push it. The cell companies don't want to push it.
Right. They got pushback from Microsoft, and of course their natural reaction is, well, screw you.
Screw you. And we know this. You go to a Verizon store, you don't get shown the Windows phones.
Yeah.
They steer you to...
Someone said that what I just said it was an excuse. But I have to say...
I don't think so.
It's not an excuse. There's so many different ways you can spin things, but it's not fair to say this is an excuse. This is a reason. Why can't it just be a reason? It's not like a Monday morning quarterback. Well, actually, it is a Monday morning quarterback kind of thing. But it's one of those things where you realize after the fact, like, wow, we tried to do the right thing.
In hindsight, you could have predicted this, but I don't think anybody thought ahead and realized this is going to be the side effect. Now, remember, Apple was able to dictate to the cellular carriers, but they did it by having monopoly with AT&T for 3 years.
I was going to say, that's a very different situation, right? And you got to remember, too, that before that happened, every single wireless carrier in the United States said no to them.
Right. They didn't want that deal.
They went to the big ones first. Yep. The company they ended up with was Singular originally. And became AT&T, and they were one of the smaller carriers. And the only reason they were able to get involved with them was those guys really needed a push. They needed a kind of a hero phone, and they were willing to take a chance because they were in a position where they had to take a risk to succeed.
I would also say, I don't think Microsoft has really disciplined the carriers all that much. I mean, if you look at how the updates work, you know, Microsoft sends the bits to the carriers, right? Then they have the opportunity to test it. And they're the ones who say, okay, now we're ready to roll it out. And that's why we saw, you know, some phones getting updated, some phones not getting updated, why Microsoft had to launch that site called Where's My Windows Phone Update? Because it's all over the place where your updates are.
You know, the Android version of that would be just like a cricket chirp sound.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not saying it's bad, because this is in our positive category.
There's also evidence, you know, Raphael.
You know, we've solved the problem, though, of which you start with, because everything's both positive and negative. So,
And these guys, you know, they can't help themselves. Both the hardware makers and the wireless carriers have made revisions to the firmware on these phones without telling Microsoft, thus creating which is the reason that no-do stuff happened. Because these phones that were unrecognizable were hitting the update servers, and they didn't know what to do with them. And Samsung or AT&T or whoever was responsible for this stuff never told Microsoft, oh, we changed the phone.
Oh, by the way.
Oh, did you need to know about that?
Yeah. Does that affect you?
Sorry. Please feel free to take all the bad press that's about to follow. Oh, you know, it's tough. So Microsoft did do the right thing with the Windows Phone update process, ultimately, I think. And I think given... You know, again, these guys are all working in their own awful interests and having to work within that system. You got to give them some credit. And they did appear to get it right. I mean, it was awful in the beginning of the year. It wasn't their fault. And they certainly got it better with Mango to an amazing degree.
I think mobile is one of those things that you have to be in. You have to participate if you want to be a player going forward. This is where everything's happening. But it is also, in the U.S. anyway, a terrible environment and so difficult for any company. And so, you know, all these companies, when Apple said we're going to do a phone, I went, oh my God, are they really? That's crazy. You don't want to get in that marketplace. These guys are nuts.
And I'm saying that right now about TVs.
Yeah.
Which means that this thing will be spectacular.
Which means they'll do great.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Paul says, Paul and Leo don't like it.
I'm going to give them a throat bump. That product sucks.
Let's talk. You mentioned cloud, Mary Jo. That the Microsoft. This was the year Microsoft decided to transform itself into a cloud company. It's ironic, isn't it? Because this is what Ray Ozzie wanted to do, and he's gone. He was Mr. Cloud.
True.
Is this the legacy of Ray Ozzie?
No, I wouldn't call it that. Ray Ozzie's idea was more like, let's add cloud to all the products, like add cloud and Stir. You know,
right.
And this is more about, Microsoft actually figuring out, hey, this is a better business model for us. So here we're going to talk about Office 365, you know, which is the successor to the BPOS product that they had. And it's Microsoft hosted Office in the cloud, basically. And so why I put this on the list was I really think it's interesting that with BPOS, Microsoft wasn't trying to get small businesses. And, you know, who's their biggest competitor in this space? It's Google. Where is Google selling Google Docs and Google Apps? Small businesses, predominantly. And Microsoft didn't even have a real offering in that space with BPOS. So when they launched Office 365 in June of this year, they finally had something to really go against Google Apps. Finally, they had a real competitor. And if you look at their numbers, they've sold roughly 5 million seats, they say, of Office 365. Since June, and 90% of this is going to small businesses. So finally, they're filling a need that was out there and actually having a real competitor finally to Google in this space. So I think that's a success. Give them a star on that one.
Instantly bypass Google in this market, actually. I mean, Google will obviously have those occasional wins like Berkeley College, whatever. But, you know, the truth is, I think a lot of people – you almost have to have two sides to do an evaluation. So they're like, all right, let's just throw Google over here. But, you know, Microsoft comes out on top basically every single time. I mean,
is that true in installs? I mean, or can you look at numbers and say, oh, yeah, Microsoft's just killing Google Docs?
I would say it's been true of installs since Office 365 launch.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, yeah, obviously. They didn't have a problem.
One of the things
and the other
really
thing that, although I would say we don't really know, because the other piece we don't have here is how many of these are free on both sides? How many are paid?
Right.
You know, do you equate free and paid? So it's tough to really do the apples to apples comparison.
So Google will win the free one, I'm sure, because Microsoft doesn't have a free alternative. But,
right, they don't have a free one.
But even, you know, and Tom Rizzo, I'm sure, gave you the same quote that he gave me. He said, look, you know, Office 365 for an individual, $6 a month. I spend more than that on Starbucks every single day.
Right.
So why is that a huge expense? And look what I'm getting for it. Enterprise class email, calendar, tasks, contacts, communications, document sharing. You know, it kind of goes on and on and on. It's amazing. And Office 365 is the real deal. It's fantastic. There's no downside to this. I mean, it's just great. There's parts of it about it that could get a little bit better. There are parts of it that have gotten better. You know, Mary Jo wrote the other day about that add-in for Windows Small Business Server Essentials, which allows you to integrate that service with that small business server, which is fantastic stuff. I'd like to see the Office web apps mature more and so on. But, you know, this is a great example of them taking a core business, arguably the core business of the company, putting it in the cloud, and, oh, look, it works. And then having the whole thing where they have on-premise solutions of Exchange Server, pure cloud solutions like Office 365, and then that thing that Google can never do, the hybrid solution. You can combine the two. You can have a little bit of
both. So really, it should be a huge win. You know, it's funny because mindshare-wise, it's not.
I think it will be. Yeah. I think it will.
You think it will be?
It's already, this is, you know, BPOS never had a good
name.
You know, word of mouth. Well, there were all kinds of things. I looked at BPOS like they were just testing the waters. They wanted, it was almost like a public RDP program, right?
Yeah.
Get it out there with some big customers, see how it does. And then see how their servers work, you know? Yeah. You had to have 10, sorry.
Sorry, Paul. I was going to say, you know, the exchange that was in BPOS, the hosted exchange, it was never even made for the cloud, right? And so when Microsoft was having outage after outage in BPOS, a lot of it was traceable to Exchange wasn't made to be multi-tenant.
An on-prem version of Exchange that they were hosting and putting on a cloud-facing server. Yeah,
right. So with Office 365, they fixed that.
You know, I think time will tell is what they do on the iPad
with
Office 365.
Well, with Office. So actually, I would just say as far as
Is that really Mac-centric, Apple-centric? Because that's my fanboyism.
No. I was going to say, when you look at the Exchange capabilities, email, context, calendaring, when you look at the SharePoint stuff, and you look at, like, actually all that stuff is on the iPad right now. It's built into the iPad natively, and Microsoft has native apps now for SkyDrive and for Link. Right. So all that stuff is on the iPad. What's not on the iPad is a native version of Office. And I could be wrong about this because I don't look at this every day, but I believe that the Office web app version, you know, the Office web apps, only work on the iPad in sort of a read-only sense. You can read documents, but once you go into the edit mode, that doesn't work. Or it works poorly. It's something like that. So what they don't have is the Office app solution on the iPad. But, you know, the rest of that stuff is there. You can see if Office is delivered on the iPad, all of a sudden that's the full meal deal.
If I get Office 365 for that $6 a month for individuals, does that mean on multiple computers or is that on one computer? That means anywhere, right?
It's anywhere. It's devices, it's PCs. I mean,
I'm accessing a cloud service and it's just running.
The $6 version of Office 365 does not give you native Windows applications of
it's like web based. Word.
It's right. It's the service. In other words, it's the Exchange based email, calendar, contact service. It's the SharePoint based document sharing and collaboration service. It's the Link based hosted communication service.
But I get a word processor. It's just a HTML based word processor.
Yeah,
by the way, they do a nice job.
Actually, it's very good. But if you have Office on your desktop, whether it's a Mac or a PC, obviously you can use that in tandem with those services as well.
Of course.
So all of the documents that you access through Word could be up on SharePoint.
Right.
You know, the email you access would obviously be up at
SharePoint. $6. It's a good deal.
Yeah. Yep. And if you add $2 more, isn't it, Paul, $2 or $3 more per person, you also can get a copy of Office Professional, which is the highest end version of Office, to put on your PC. So it's like you're renting Office from Microsoft, if that's what you want to do too. So that's another option, kind of add-in option.
What I would like to see is Microsoft has a related service, which doesn't get as much press, called Windows Intune. And this is a PC management service. It's amazing because it's a no-touch service. You know, the computers never have to come into any environment. They can just be out on the internet. You install an agent, and then a central administrator can determine what updates get installed. You know, they can do software licensing searches to see if everyone's in compliance and so forth. They can do all this stuff. That service is fairly expensive per PC. It's not as great of a deal, if you will, as Office 365. But what I'd like to see this coming year is them combine them into a they don't even have to combine them, just make a combined license, you know, that for a cheaper price than buying both of those separately, you could have both of those services for all of your employees in a small business, medium business, whatever, and then not only give them all the email and everything, but also the PC management stuff, which I think would be a big, big deal.
They've said that's coming. You know, they didn't say in 2012, but they've said Intune is going to be an add-in to Office 365 somewhere down the line. And already, if you're into CRM, CRM Online is an add-on to Office 365 now. So pretty soon they're going to have like this checklist, you know, hey, do you want this service? Do you want this? Check, check, add. Here's your 1 month bill.
The reason this stuff is exciting is because, you know, 6 months ago, if you were a small business or if Mary Jo and I were going to start our own company, you know, we would kind of go out and look at the world and say, well, Google Apps is free. Let's just sign up for that. We would be responsible for individually maintaining our own PCs and all that kind of stuff. And today, for a very minimum cost, you can get all these enterprise capabilities from Microsoft through Office 365 and also from Intune that just were not available to individuals before. You know, BPOS, I think you had to have 10 licenses just to sign up for it. You know, with Office 365, you just need one. You could do it. You could do it by yourself with your own domain for $6 a month. That's an incredible deal.
Yeah, Google Apps is not free though. If you do it for business, it's $50 a year. We actually are using Google Apps, and I think that Russell, our IT guy, who is a big Microsoft fan, and Lisa, who wants to use Excel, not the crappy spreadsheet in Google Docs, we're going to end up. Well, she says this is too slow. And
out of 10 Google Apps users also have Office on the desktop.
Really? Yeah, she has Office. So I just think it makes sense, and I think we're going to end up using Office 365.
Either Google Apps gets significantly better, or this condition persists.
Yeah.
I don't see any other way around. I agree.
But it is a story that Microsoft, which owned this marketplace, and this wouldn't have been a question 3 years ago, right? Yeah. That's a change. Whether they're going to win but the fact that there's a race at all is a big story. It hasn't been since WordPerfect. How long ago was that?
I doubt that Google Docs is really competing with Word, you know, for any kind of title.
But it's still in the conversation.
There are some number of users, and that's enough.
It's in the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely, and maybe as important, just like with these mobile devices, and you know, the market gets bigger. You know, the potential market for this stuff just gets bigger. And I still think it's a growth area for Microsoft. You know, they could actually get new customers for these products that never would have been on Exchange, that never would have been on SharePoint. You know, so ultimately this is kind of a big win, I think, for Microsoft.
We're talking about the best and worst of 2011, Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. More to come in just a moment, but I do want to mention our friends at Audible.com who've been a sponsor all along. In fact, they love this show because Paul is such an Audible fan, as am I. And we like talking about Audible books. In fact, sometimes Paul will just put an Audible book in the show notes for no reason. Just, can I talk about this? He did that last week. We didn't have an Audible ad. I asked, by the way, thank you for filling in for me last week. But we have an Audible ad this week, Paul Thurrott. So let me tell people about Audible.com, and then you can give us your Audible pick of the week. I shouldn't have to tell anybody about Audible.com. If you've seen this show even once before, you probably know it's the best online bookstore anywhere, 100,000-plus titles, the best books. And now, you know, I think audiobooks have come of age. And so pretty much every book that comes out now there's an Audible version. And that's, I love, you know, my mom was telling me about a book she loves which I now am a big fan of, called The Marriage Plot by a guy named Jeffrey Eugenides. I loved his last book, Middle Sex. And, of course, first thing I do was to go to Audible. I said, well, this is a new book. I wonder if they have. Yes, of course they have it. And that's what I love about Audible. Nowadays, I can get my, you know, keep up with the hot books that everybody's talking about. Enjoy the books that I'm reading, the science fiction that I love, the history that I love. And with 100,000 titles, there's just a ton of titles to choose from. Now, here's the deal. It plays, by the way, on everything, including your Zune and your iPod. Not yet on Windows Phone. We're working on it. I'm sure that'll be soon. Android and iPhone have a great app. I hope they port that to Windows Phone because it's fantastic. But we're going to give you a free book. All you have to do is go to audible.com/windows. You'll be signing up for the gold account. Oh, look, snow crashes out. All you have to do is, they've had this for a while. All you have to do is go to audible.com/windows, sign up for the gold account. That's a book a month. Your first month's free. Your first book's free. You can cancel at any time and keep that book forever. Now, Paul, you said you wanted to talk about something.
I'm sorry, this is completely unrelated to what you just said, but Tim Bolton on Twitter says, Kinect today is the Solitaire of Windows NT.
Wow.
Or is to today as Solitaire was to NT. Anyway.
What does that mean? It means it comes
that
with...
It's only the beginning.
It's only the beginning.
It's only the beginning. It's the basic beginning of gaming.
You mean, I get it. Okay. All right.
That makes sense. You mentioned Snow Crash, too, I heard. There's no doubt that 3 years ago or something, I recommended Snow Crash.
Yeah. What a great book.
Snow Crash is a classic. This year has been really odd. I'm a history fan and a World War II. I don't want to say World War II fan, but...
I am, too. I read all those books.
If you will.
Yeah, I read The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich when I was in eighth grade. I mean, I love this stuff.
Yeah, so this year, for whatever reason, has been a crazy year for new and important books about World War II, and I've recommended at least one or two of them before, and there are at least a couple more. This would be the second of three very big and very great World War II books that have come out this year. It's called The End, The Defiance and Destruction of Hitler's Germany, 1944 to 1945, and what it basically deals with is this situation where Germany had lost the war and then fought for over another year further. A situation that has never been repeated anywhere in history, including, by the way, with Japan in World War II. The situation in Germany was very unique, and it's about basically the question: how were they ever able to make that happen? And it's a multiple reasons and so forth. But very, very interesting, and it makes me wonder if there wasn't some German version of the Freedom of Information Act, something, because there's just so much. New information.
Yeah.
And you would think, we know, how could we possibly learn anything new about World War II at this point?
Right.
As it turns out, there's a lot more. And I actually have another pick beyond this one for later of another excellent World War II book that I'm still reading right now. But it's just fascinating to me that here we are 60 plus years later, and there's still new and important things still being written about it.
One of the nice things on every Audible page, you can listen before you buy, so you can see what the book sounds like. And I think that's a good idea. The readers they use are fantastic. They bring a book to life. And so I know a lot of people are a little nervous about the idea of an audio book, like, am I going to be able to pay attention? Am I going to be able to follow it? And it may be the first time. That's why we like to give you the first one free. Maybe the first time it takes a little getting used to. It's the only way I want to read anymore. I love it. Audible.com/windows. Your first book's free. You can choose from almost any book. There are a few books that take more than one credit, but almost any book on the 100,000 book playlist. And this is the one Paul's recommending. And I'm adding it right now to my next listen. The End, The Defiance and Destruction of Hitler's Germany, 1944 to 1945. Ian Kershaw, who's written a number of books on this subject, is really good. Fascinating. And by the way, you can then see, and this I like this also, you see right here, people who bought this also bought. And there's a lot of other classics like The Berlin Diary, William L. Shirer's The Berlin Diary, which is incredible. Inferno, The World at War. You've recommended that one before, I think. Then the denazification of Germany, exorcising Hitler. If you love history, boy, it brings history to life. Give it a try for free. Audible.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of our little show here. Big Audible fans. Every one of us. So item 5, ka-ching. That sounds, that's a Paul Thurrott if I ever heard one.
I did Thurrottify a lot.
You Thurrottified it. Ka-ching.
Because actually, Mary Jo wrote this one, but I added a little.
You put the ka-ching in?
I wrote the little ka-ching in.
He did.
See, that's, I, that's just add, it's like a value add.
What do you mean, ka-ching, Mary Jo?
So here we're talking about what we mentioned earlier in the show already, actually, which was Microsoft is selling a heck of a lot of Windows 7 and Office 2010. Yeah, they're making money, guys. Yeah, they're making a lot of money. And what's crazy in this to me is, okay, Windows 7 and Office 2010 launched a while ago, both of them. And we know new versions of both of these products are coming next year. Despite that fact, they're still selling tens of millions of these. I don't remember how many they sold this year. 20 million licenses of Windows 7 every single month.
A month.
So, yeah, so much for the post-PC era, right? I mean, like, they're still selling a lot of PC software here and operating systems and Office. Office, I think they sold 100 million copies today.
Fastest selling version ever.
Fastest selling ever.
And, you know, at a time when this stuff is, you know, supposed to be going away.
Right. So, you know, that's pretty surprising to a lot of people because they're like, oh, no one's buying PCs. No one's buying any more Windows 7. It's done.
Microsoft's dead.
Yeah, everything's dead. But no. Actually, Microsoft is still selling a heck of a lot of software for PCs. And this is still what's fueling the growth of Microsoft. Office and Windows are still fueling the growth of Microsoft. You know, they're slowing down, but they're still growing. And so that's why it's on our best list instead of on our worst list here.
Yeah. No, it should be. Yeah.
Yep.
And it is often overlooked. And that's, I think, the nature of journalism and tech journalism in particular is it's all about the flavor of the month. A company that's been around for a while and is just kind of continually putting in good results year after year. And the stock market feels the same way, obviously. What have you done for
boring.
Me lately? Boring. Consistent results. Oh, how boring. We want double growth every year, you know. That's what we're looking for. And nobody can do that consistently forever. Bing the thing. Now, Microsoft. Wait, you want to say more about ka-ching?
No, we got to jump ahead too. We're going to do five of the best and five of the worst.
All right, so I will just briefly mention in the runners-up category, Bing.
No, we're going to come back.
Oh, we're going to alternate.
Yeah.
Oh, aren't you clever? Aren't you smart?
Well, I should point out that these aren't in any particular order. These are just 10.
I don't know how you'd put them in
great
order.
Great things, 10 bad things. I don't know. You know, I don't know that we give
the
more
worst.
To...
The worst thing that happened this year to Microsoft. No, it's not. It's just something.
It's one of it's one of the
one
worst.
Thing. But I'm not going to say this because they're going to say, "Oh, Leo, you're such a fanboy."
I'd actually say if we did have to pick the one worst thing, this would be my one worst thing.
What was that, Mary?
So, this sounds like a good thing when we first say it. Microsoft is not Apple. Yes, they are not Apple.
No, and it's good. We have a choice.
But they're trying to be Apple, which is driving me absolutely nuts. I mean, there's some things they could do better. You know, the fit and finish on products, the UI design, all the things that Apple is known for. But they shouldn't try to copy Apple in terms of the secrecy stuff. They can't pull this off. It doesn't work for them. They have a billion people in their user base. They can't just not comment on things when they're wrong and let misinformation spread. And that's what's happening with Windows 8 right now. Just to point one
it's
of many
weird
things.
Because if you think about this, Microsoft has thousands, if not tens of thousands of employees who blog. So the company is in many ways very open. Apple has, let me see if I can count this correctly, zero employees who blog. They're very secretive. And people who do release information one way or the other are often fired or demoted or whatever. They get in trouble. Microsoft, in trying to be like Apple, is trying to have it both ways. You know, here they have the whole company is blogging away about whatever they want to talk about. And then you've got this like a certain little subgroup that wants to be very careful with information and release it in little, you know, pulpy bits and only when they feel like doing it. And I mean, I get it because I feel like in the Jim Altman years, maybe they were a little too forthcoming and that caused some problems when they weren't able to deliver on some of the promises. And I understand that. But I think there's a middle ground between that kind of paranoid Steve Jobs type of secrecy and then the freewheeling, let's tell the world what we're doing because we're so excited about technology and we want people to love us, kind of Jim Altucher thing that, you know,
people said the worst thing about Steve Jobs passing away this year is now you're going to see a dozen CEOs who are going to say, I'm the next Steve Jobs. I want to be just like him. And I do believe that that's impossible.
Do you actually think we're going to see anyone stand up on a stage or in any situation and actually say,
yes,
now I'm the next Steve Jobs?
Well, no, maybe not, but they want to be like him.
Kill John on, you know, like I've been just waiting for that guy to die. So
no, they want to be
like a slightly shorter, weirder version of him.
Camille Un. They want to be. And I think this is true probably at Microsoft. There are people who, as you say, Mary Jo, say, oh, look at the marketing value Apple has achieved by this secrecy. But it's a unique situation that I don't think is.
Exactly.
No.
Nobody wants something that's like something but isn't that thing. I keep saying this. You know,
it's kind of like
Apple is Apple. Just do your own thing or don't.
It's kind of like a hot dog, but it's made of pomegranate. No, that's
yes. Thus, it is not a hot dog. That's my point.
Yes.
It's about a product that there's no information out yet about it. Say a new Xbox game or a new Xbox console. Okay, be secret about that. But once you've shown Windows 8 and you've even given it to people in the form of, you know, already installed on a tablet, if you came to build, how can you now say to your employees, if you demo Windows 8, you will be fired? And that is actually what they have told
them.
Are they
doing that? Yeah, because it suddenly got very quiet in here.
Yes. Nobody from Microsoft except the very few approved people, namely Steven Sinofsky, who runs Windows, is allowed to talk about Windows 8. It's like you can't even answer people's questions when they have a question about something that they've already said.
Well, let me play devil's advocate. Maybe they're not trying to be like Apple, but merely just trying to hold the line because what's happens is it scares people. You say something like Metro apps only on the tablet. And people get terrified, and there's all this press and all this writing and this blogging, and it just becomes a furor.
I'm sorry. It is more irresponsible to sort of discuss ARM and then ignore the very valid questions that discussion arises.
Once you've started it, you're right. You can't stop it. Yeah, no, I agree.
This is just...
But you might,
it's a fundamental disagreement I just have.
Steven Sinofsky say, okay, but we got to get a lid on this. I can just see the meeting.
Tell us what you're going to do, or tell us right now you don't know what you're going to do. Because.
Say something.
Otherwise, there's a vacuum and there's speculation.
Yeah.
And then people say, you know, we love to speculate. Here's one of the ways it could happen. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, it doesn't. Nobody knows. We still don't know. Even as we're having this discussion, we don't know.
Yeah.
We have opinions about it, but we don't know.
I mean, do you guys realize Microsoft has still never said, I believe, that Windows 8 is coming out in 2012?
No, they haven't. We don't know a date.
Isn't that crazy?
We all assume the date.
Right. Especially if you're a partner, you know, like a reseller or, say, a business customer trying to create a plan, and you can't even get that piece of information out of Microsoft, that's problematic, I think.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Okay.
Yeah.
Windows Phone, number two in the worst category. This has got to be a Paul Thurrott. Mr. Windows Phone, what's the matter, Paul?
Wrong again, Leo.
Mary Jo, what's the matter, Mary Jo?
I think this is more, we started talking about this in the best list too, right?
Right.
And kind of
I think that's what's interesting is that there's no...
Okay.
They can't please anybody, that's the thing.
Yeah. No, my pet peeve here, no Windows Phone Mango devices in market for holiday 2011, except for, I think, the Titan in the U.S. And also the Radar. I'm talking about U.S. now, not worldwide.
The problem is they have three devices on the two Focus devices, right? So there's three on AT&T, there's one on T-Mobile, and then there's nothing on Sprint or Verizon.
Right.
And look, it's hard to know who to blame here. I, based on conversations I've had with people, it's actually Verizon in Verizon's case. Verizon seems to follow the beat of their own drummer. They want to do their own thing. So how you could possibly not be there with a device for launch for the holiday season is bizarre to me, but this is the company that didn't come out with the first gen device until what, April or whatever it was later. I don't even remember, but after months and months of delays, And now we know that they're not going to have one until basically that time next year for the second gen. So, you know, that stinks. And it makes people question the platform further. Why isn't there one on Sprint? Is there going to be one on Sprint? Why isn't there one in Verizon? Will there be, you know, it's the same thing with the previous one. People ask questions and there are no answers. You know, they can't even say, oh, yes, it will happen sometime next year. That's all we can say. They don't even say that. They say nothing.
They say nothing. I know nothing.
The other issue is we talked about the spec and how Microsoft was doing maybe the right thing there. But in some ways, having such a strict spec can also be limiting. So 800 by 480 screen was pretty good for, you know, mid-2010. The iPhone 4 came out at that time with a 960 by 640 screen. We see 1280 by 720 now.
By the way, nice. I have a 12. I have that Nexus, and I've been gone on record saying that's a crappy screen because in order to get that resolution, they had to use a Pentile display, which has all this color noise in it. So it's
okay.
So I mean, it's nice. Nothing's perfect. The idea is nice. Nothing's perfect.
They've limited this thing to a single resolution, which has its advantages. Also has its disadvantages. You know.
Well, yeah.
That's the problem. Yep. It's a little confining. And we still don't have those next-gen features.
Right. There was a little bit of good news today from Paul on his site where he had some information on LTE phones coming to AT&T. Three new phones coming, supposedly.
I'd love to see a 4G Windows phone on Verizon.
I don't believe
that's happening. Although I have to go back and look at what I have because there's a Lumia phone coming on Verizon. But
is it the Lumia phone or a Lumia phone?
No, it is. Well, it's the 710, which is the lower end.
No, that's a crap one. We don't want that one. We want the 800 or 900 or whatever it's going to be.
Yeah. So that's coming on AT&T as an LTE device. I don't know, but I know I looked. I should probably look again. I don't believe that the Verizon one is LTE, but it may just not say.
Yeah. Somebody in the chat room said, I went to Verizon. I'm sorry, AT&T, to buy a phone. I wanted to take a look at the HTC's Titan.
Yep.
And the AT&T guy said, no. Mm-hmm. You don't want that phone. Confirming what we've, anecdotally, we keep hearing.
Part of what I didn't leak was information with regards to how Microsoft intends to deal with that kind of problem. Unless that starts to leak somewhere else, I'm just going to leave it at that and say, Microsoft has announcements, and Nokia certainly has announcements that they will make at CES. It's not that far away, so
they have a plan. There is a plan.
There is a plan.
There's a plan. That's all we can say now.
Zip the lip, Paul. Yeah.
Speaking of which, of course, we're going to
They're aware of it, right? I mean, I think the important bit is they know. This is a problem. This is not. Not one guy that walked into an AT&T got turned away from Windows Phone. This happens everywhere
over and over. And this is not a problem. It's I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily assume that it's an AT&T corporate policy. You got to remember, these are normal people at AT&T stores who love the iPhone, and they want
to. Actually, no. I don't think that has anything to do.
No,
with it. No. I think they're steered towards certain devices.
There's a memo. See, we need a smoking gun. We need that memo that says,
I would expect that information to come out pretty soon.
So. Okay, there we go. See, we got a little more there. You know, I'm good at this.
You heard it here first.
Really squeeze the guy. Squeeze all the good juice out of him. Speaking of CES, we are going to be there. Paul, you're not, I guess, I gather.
I'm not. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Shocking.
We're pulling out a year earlier than Microsoft.
that's a story, by the way, that we haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah.
Ballmer gave the keynote after, you know, Gates did it for years, first at Comdex and at CES. Then Ballmer took over a couple of years ago when Bill retired. Ballmer will do one more keynote this year, and then that's it, right? Are they going to have a booth, or is it just the keynotes they're pulling out of?
No booth. They have a prominent booth, you know, right in the doorway one of the big halls. And I'm imagining it's not cheap, you know.
Right.
It's probably pretty expensive.
No, they're doing what everybody, this is what's happening, isn't it? This is another emulation of Apple. Apple did that a long time ago, saying, hey, if we do our own conferences, we control the message. Build is a great example of what a great conference. By the way, somebody in the chat room, I think it was Bawa to Bob said, you got to add to the worst. Maybe the worst thing that happened all year, Paul Thurrott jumping into a pile of beanbags at Build.
That was one of the best things that happened.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, got it on the wrong list. Anyway, so you won't be there, but we will. We will cover the Windows tablets, the Windows phone announcements. There'll be a lot of, I think, a lot of Microsoft at this event. Not just from Microsoft, but from third parties, right?
Yeah, definitely. And Microsoft says they'll have some presence in the future. I will say, you know, and you know this from going to CES and shows like CES, there are these auxiliary shows like Showstoppers and
PepCom, yep.
PepCom, you know, and so forth. Those are very important for the press, and a lot of those companies don't have a formal CES presence on the stage floor. Some of them do, but I could picture Microsoft
doing
having
that.
A big presence there.
Yeah, that's
the other thing that companies will often do, often hotels around the show, like Dell will do this and Lenovo and so forth, is they'll rent a suite, and they'll bring journalists up to look at the machines that will be coming out that coming year. And I could picture Microsoft doing that kind of a thing, where it would be far less expensive for them to rent a suite at a hotel and have some kind of a food service going on than be on the show floor and have to ship all those employees down there and all the costs associated with that. That probably makes a lot of sense. So I would expect Microsoft's CES presence in the future to be that kind of thing. And I think that's fine.
Yeah. By the way, I guess we'll do Windows, if this is okay with you, we'd like to do Windows mm-hmm. Weekly the Monday before CES from our studios. I'm leaving Monday afternoon, maybe 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 p.m. your time. Let's talk. If we can, I'd like to do that. And then what we could do then is you could give us your, you know,
predictions. Your
predictions, which would be great.
Right, because Steve Ballmer's that night, right?
Yeah. And then
what's the date?
The 9th, I think.
The 9th, okay. So are we doing a show? Oh, next week is the 5th.
Next week we are doing a show. And then what I was hoping we could do is do a show the following Monday. I know that's a pretty quick turnaround. But yep. I think we can make that be the pre-CES show.
Yeah, make
show.
It be something.
So we'll put that on the schedule. But if that works for you and Mary Jo. Now, Mary Jo, are you coming to CES?
No. Any excuse to boycott
What's
Las Vegas is in,
yeah.
it's on my list.
It's universal.
I'm actually going to Las Vegas about 2 weeks after CES.
Why don't you go and just stay enough. 2 weeks? Because God knows, 2 weeks in Vegas is
just a blast.
I would probably be contemplating suicide.
I 3 days and it's enough for me. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
All right, so let's do that. We'll do Monday before CES, before I fly out. I fly out like 4:30 that afternoon. Wow, that's going to be tight.
Yeah. Ooh.
One to two. Well, we'll just make it an hour-long show, and I'll be out of there by 2:30.
Yeah, what time are we doing this at?
1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. Can you do that?
Or we could do it after the Ballmer keynote, 1 a.m.
Oh,
Eastern.
That's an interesting idea. I'll go to my... Okay, let's talk. We'll talk off the air. But I do. I think that's maybe a good idea, Mary Jo. Thank you.
I'll be up all night. Hey, woohoo.
You don't care, do you?
I don't care.
You don't have to get up in the morning.
No.
You're a blogger. You're in your jammies anyway.
I am.
Wow.
Exactly.
Isn't that why people become bloggers? They can work in their jammies?
Indeed.
So anyway, I like the idea of us kind of doing a pre-CES show, maybe post-Ballmer pre-CES, but I do believe that Microsoft and Microsoft partners are going to have lots to say at this year's CES. Ironically, their last CES.
Right.
Very weird. Very weird. If I would be worried if I were the owners, I don't know who owns CES these days, but I would be worried. Speaking of worried, Silverlight developers a little nervous. That's item 3 on our list of the worsts.
Yeah, this is mine.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for a while now.
We have, and it just keeps getting worse instead of better, which is kind of depressing. But you know, before Build happened, the Silverlight developers were worried that Microsoft wasn't going to support Silverlight with Windows 8. That right. turned out to be a false worry. They are allowing Silverlight development with Windows 8, but then Microsoft just recently shipped Silverlight 5. And usually what they do when they ship a new release of Silverlight is they say, okay, here's the new version, and here's when roughly to expect the next version. Or here's some information on the next version. Nope, nothing.
Nothing.
I've heard from people I've talked to, there is no Silverlight 6. But Microsoft isn't saying that. In fact, they're saying nothing. Absolutely nothing. It is a theme. It's a theme of the show. But what they did say, which to me is very telling, is when they shipped Silverlight 5, they said support for Silverlight 5 is going to continue through 2021. Now, usually with versions of Silverlight, the support is only for 2 years because that's you know, every 1 to 2 years you get a new Silverlight. The fact that it's 10 years from now makes me really even more convinced there's no more Silverlight after this. The problem is, okay, so what do you do if you're a Silverlight developer? And what does this mean? What's going to take the place? Because Silverlight's really useful for a lot of things, like Windows Phone development and line of business application development, streaming media services. I mean, they're just not saying what's coming, and it's really upsetting the apple cart, I'd say. I guess apple cart's a bad analogy. But.
yeah, careful.
Upsetting
there.
The pomegranate hot dog cart is what they're upsetting.
Yes, the pomegranate hot dog cart has been upset.
No, this is upsetting to everybody, but particularly people who have invested in Silverlight, in learning it, writing in it.
This is only a kind of a side topic, but I've been looking at Windows Phone development again recently and am once again struck by how fantastic it is. And comparing it to Windows 8 development, which is surprisingly different and not so good, comparatively speaking. And I feel like with Silverlight, it's like a missed opportunity that they actually ended up doing something pretty cool there. And now it seems like they're walking away from it. Or if they aren't, you know, again, they're not doing a very good job of communicating that. It's too bad. It's actually really nice on the phone anyway. They did a great job with that.
I mean, they could have done what Adobe did, I think. You know, Adobe finally just said, guess what, guys? Here's what we're doing. No more mobile support. We're going HTML5 with Flash. And all Microsoft had to do was like say, okay, here's where we are going to support Silverlight in the future, and here's where we're not. Instead, there's absolute nothing. No information.
They still could, I suppose, right?
They could. They could.
I don't expect this, but there's some possibility that they could get up on the CES stage and say, look, here's what we're doing with Windows Phone this year. Here's what we're doing with Windows 8. I know. It's not going to happen.
You see me shaking
could
my head.
Don't take this from me. It could happen.
I think all their development platforms are out of sync, right? That's the problem, right? Like, how you develop for Windows Phone is different.
It's very tragic. You know, Windows Phone, the first version, shipped with Windows Silverlight 3 technology right when Silverlight 4 was out. Windows Phone 7.5, the one that just came out, now have Silverlight 4, but Silverlight 5 is out. You know, so it's always been kind of a step behind. I mean, you know, now there's questions about will there be a future version of Windows Phone based on the current code base, and will it be Silverlight 5? What will that thing be? No idea.
Moving along to rats versus a sinking ship. I'm guessing Paul Thurrott takes the lead on this one.
Once again, that was a headline that I wrote. I should just be a headline writer.
You should be a headline. You're good at this. So, Mary Jo, Microsoft lost a lot of some well-known names. Took off.
They did this year. And it's funny. I was thinking, if I blogged about every single person who matters at Microsoft who's left this year, my whole blog would just be nothing but Microsoft departures, basically. So,
all about ex-Microsoft.
I'm not even going to try to name them here, but. Yeah, Windows Phone lost a lot of people. Silverlight, not surprisingly, lost a bunch of people. It's just been kind of a parade of people going to Microsoft competitors or starting their own companies or becoming venture capitalists. There was a lot more attrition than usual, I feel safe to say. And
so, do you attribute this to, you know, what I wrote in the notes, which is sort of like, what do they know that we don't, and should we worry about that, or is this just a natural thing about, you know, the average age of a Microsoft employee is X number of years, and maybe we're just at that time of life where a lot of these guys have hit 40 plus or something, and they've been at Microsoft for 20 years now, and maybe they're looking, you know, they can see what's going on in the industry and where all the money's being made and the excitement is, and they want to be part of that thing that got them so excited when they were younger. You know, do you think it's some of both?
I think some of both from people I've talked to who've left. You know, sometimes it's like not agreeing with the direction of the company, and you get a lot of, I blame Steve Ballmer. If Steve Ballmer wasn't there, I would have stayed, you know, sure. Which I think.
I don't think
yeah,
that's
and
true.
Let's see what happens. No, I don't either. Like,
it's
you put
like
somebody
blaming
else in
the president of the United States on the economy. You know, that unfortunately there's a lot of factors.
I think this happens at all mature technology companies. It's happening to Google. There's been a brain drain to Facebook. People want to be where the hot happening thing is.
Yeah.
And often that's the bigger names, you know, the rank and file programmers and people, they, you know, they're in there. It's a job for them. It's 9 to 5. But the people who are hot can make take a pick, and they want to be.
The problem for Microsoft, though, is that they were always defined by this generation of executives, many of whom had been there for a long time. And certainly there have been eras. You know, there was kind of the Brad Silverberg era, and you know, Paul Maritz who left, and that, you know, those guys from the late 90s, and more recently guys like Bob Mugley and so forth. But I feel like now I don't have as good of a handle on these people anymore. You know, and the more that people leave, the more that there are these curious additions. I remember there were people from the past like Kevin Turner who I kind of looked at like, what is this guy doing here? Or Andy Lees was a little bit like that. Like, who is this guy? And why is he running Windows Phone? You know, it was not, I don't mean that they're bad people or the wrong person for the job necessarily, but they were just confusing choices to me as an outsider. Whereas in the past, you kind of had this healthy succession of people internally at the company that made sense, at least, right? You know, the Yusuf Mehdis of the world or whatever, you know, these guys who kind of move up through the ranks. And I look at the, you know, the executive chart now, and there's a lot of faces I don't really recognize in there.
There's someone listening to our show, ex-Microsoft, recently, Lawrence Maroney, who said, look at my post on why people are leaving Microsoft. And he also mentions the ranking system that they have in place there, which is horrendous. If you ever talk to anybody who works at Microsoft, the way they rank and kind of push people out, it's a real bone of contention.
Tell us about that. What is that?
Oh, man. It's so complicated to
explain. Is it like a way of a performance rating thing?
Yeah, it's a performance rating thing. You get a score from 1 to 5, and your peers rate you as well as your boss. And so, you know, it's like you don't want to be the last. Yeah, I mean, but you don't want to be the guy, you know, if they have a team of 30 and they have to get rid of two people, like
someone's going to be number 30.
Exactly. You know? It's like
Sorry,
Survivor,
Bill.
Right?
Yeah, that is
like, just tell me I came in at number 29. Nope. Someone's going to be number 30.
But you hit the nail on the head. It's like Survivor in the sense that people make alliances because, so what happens is people are gaming.
You've been voted out of the division.
Yeah, they're gaming. Sorry. Yeah. That's
I talk
good.
To people who tell me about how they gamed it with their colleagues. I mean, it's horrible.
That's not good.
No, and that creates huge, you know, disaffectation there, and people leaving, and people, you know, ganging up on colleagues, and it doesn't really give you the incentive to be on teams you want to be on and do the good work that you want to do.
It's not what you want.
Nope.
Finally, on this section, cloud concerns. We, you know, it's funny. We put cloud in the best of as well.
This is a theme, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
For every success with Office 365 and possibly Intune to a lesser degree, you know, they're not so successful things. I mean, actually, this is a Mary Jo one too, so I shouldn't take this away from her. But
stop, Paul.
I like to talk.
Stop. This is more about Azure than it is about Office 365. So, you know, Azure is what Microsoft has. It's their platform as a service play. And we don't really know how Azure is doing. So we can't say it's not successful. Microsoft will never give you numbers when you say how many developers do you have on Azure? How many apps?
Six. Nope. We have six.
Yeah, maybe five. No, it's more than that, obviously. But, you know, they've had a lot of problems figuring out the proper pricing for Azure because they've got some very stiff competition, especially Amazon. I mean, Amazon's just out there far ahead of everybody else on the cloud right now in terms of delivering what customers want. And they've also had some problems. Some people want them to have some of the things Amazon has in terms of having like an infrastructure as a service component to their offering. And they fought that all along. I mean, they moved Scott Guthrie, who the red-shirted goo, the hero of developers at Microsoft. They moved him onto Azure this year, which is good. He's been really good in the past about building tools and platforms that people want to use, being a friend of open source. So the fact that they put him on Azure is giving a lot of people hope that maybe Microsoft is going to have a better offering out there with Azure in 2012. But in 2011, they had a kind of a mixed year. I think they were really trying to figure out where they fit in, what their advantages were vis-a-vis Salesforce and Google and Amazon. And they're still kind of trying to figure it out, I think.
Yeah. Azure has been a A tough one for me. I've always had trouble with Azure.
I don't even know how to pronounce it, so.
It is Azure, I believe.
Azure.
Unlike Nokia, Azure. I think I have that one right. Azure. But I don't remember when this was, but it was either a PDC or a tech ed from a couple of years ago when they announced it. And I sat there in the audience during the keynote address, and I had no idea what they were talking about. But fortunately for journalists, they were having a one-hour session right after there where they would go right into it again. And
for you ignorant people.
I sat it. I'll never forget it because the woman from the PR company came up to me afterwards. She said, did that clear up everything for you? Do you have any questions? And I said to her, I have nothing but questions. I have no idea.
What the hell is it?
I just didn't get it. But that's just my own shortcomings. I would just say for Azure, the thing that was interesting to me most about, I think it was early, wasn't it early this year they released the... Was it that recently or was it early last year?
I don't remember.
Is it this year they released it?
Azure, launched commercially in 2010, I believe.
2010, okay. So, yeah, I'm getting old. It seems like it was yesterday.
It's hard to remember. Maybe it was.
I don't remember. But they had they had this pricing scheme that I swear they pulled out of a hat. They had no idea. I said, well, how would you explain to a customer how they would know how much they were going to spend depending on what they did? And they said, actually, we don't know that. Mm. We're just going to see how this works. And I don't mean to say they were like throwing spaghetti at the wall, but there was sort of an element of, this is new to us. We're probably going to change it. Let's just see how it goes. And they did a deal where I think the first 30 days or longer even were free so that you could gauge what your usage was and then you could see what your bill was going to look like. And then that would help you determine whether you're going to continue, I guess. Although I have to say, what are you going to do at that point when you've already spent all the time developing on Azure?
Yeah, they began charging for Azure in February 2010. I just looked that up.
So it was early last year.
Yeah. And so this year, they've done a lot of tweaking on pricing, killing the cost of data import, export. Mm-hmm. They made a lot of tweaks that people wanted. They're just starting to really kind of like do what people want. But again, this is like, almost 2 years later, right? Yeah. Yeah, they figured out how to finally explain Azure. That was even hard for them at the beginning. They couldn't really explain, like, what is this and why is it different from what Amazon does? They couldn't really.
Well, one of the things I will say positively for Azure is it does influence their on-premises products. You know, when you design an operating system that essentially runs in the cloud, has unique updating requirements and unique requirements of other kinds, the learnings that you get from that sort of impact other stuff, and so a lot of what happened with Azure will influence what happens on Windows Server 8 as well. And that's neat, that there's kind of a virtuous cycle of some kind where these products are informing other Microsoft products. So it's not all bad news. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure Azure is wonderful, but I'm only sure of it because I don't actually know what it is. So,
We're at an hour.
Nicole is fantastic.
We're at an hour and a half. We have 10 more items. Can we move through them kind of quickly?
Yeah, we need to do that.
All right, we're going to do that in just a second. We have 5 more bests and 5 more worst as we continue our look back at 2011 with Microsoft and Mary Jo Foley of allaboutmicrosoft.com, her great ZDNet blog, and Paul Thurrott of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. I want to mention briefly RingCentral. This is the phone system that we installed here at the Twit Brick House. When we, what are you laughing at?
Every time you say that, I hear something.
I know. Else. Well, if I said the Brick Twit House, it might make you laugh.
It's so close.
It's this. You know who thought it up, Paul? It's a Dick DiBartolo invention, so that's all I need to
say.
That
makes perfect sense.
it was an interesting question because we have 19 employees. It's a small business. And just as you might say, well, we're going to choose a document, system like Office 365 in the cloud, you might say, well, do we need to put a PBX in the basement? What do you do these days? There is, if you go down in the basement, there's a big phone block, AT&T style phone block for, it looked like 100 lines down there, and you could do that. And I decided, we're a modern company. We got to do something more modern. And I asked our IT guy, we have a consulting IT guy who's just brilliant, named Russell Tammany. In fact, I'll give him a plug. His company, Exponentia, is. Except don't hire him because I want more hours from Russell. He's so fantastic. He said, what I have been installing lately is RingCentral. So we tried it. And we love it. There's no startup cost. There is no PBX in the basement. It's very affordable. $25 per month per user, and you get unlimited long distance in the U.S. and I think in Canada too. And you get so many great features. You know, I have on my iPad, my iPhone, my Android phone, all have Ring Central apps. There isn't one yet for Windows Mobile, and I'm going to talk to them about that. There really should be one on Windows Phone. But what's beautiful about that, so people call our 800 number. It goes to Ring Central. We've got music on hold. I've got, you know, I say press 1, you know, the whole thing. And then it goes to whoever. I think I'm press 6. I can't remember what it is. But if I'm not here, and I have a real phone, we got these great Polycom phones. Configuration literally was plug it in. I plugged it into the jack, and it was working. It's using VoIP, by the way. It's not using no AT&T bill at all. And then on my smartphone, messages go through. I can have it ring through if I want. I have all this control. It's a virtual system that's so cool. Faxes in my email, for instance. I have been very happy with Ring Central. We use them all the time. It is as good a system as as anything I've ever used. It's so much easier, so much more powerful. It's a 30-day risk-free trial if you want to try them right now at ringcentral.com or call them. I know a lot of small businesses, you want to talk to somebody, and they're great. 1-800-800-4070. 1-800-800-4070. Ring Central, if you're looking for a phone system for your new business, or maybe you want to get rid of that PBX in your existing business, ringcentral.com, 800-800-4070. Tell them Leo sent you. You don't have to tell them that. They always say that in the radio ads, and I know nobody. Leo sent me.
Leo.
Swordfish. It's like nobody does that. You sound like an idiot when you do that. You don't have to tell him that. Okay, back to the worst of the best of the worst, because at this point it's all a muddle. Number 6.
Wait, we're going back to the best.
Oh, best. Back to the Bing. We're back to Bing. Bada-bing. So best was Bing. Now I think it's also best and worst, because the way they kept Bing relevant, they kept their share constant, was by spending a passel of money. So is it the best or the worst?
A what of money?
A passel.
A passel?
Yeah. It's a cowboy word.
Okay. We have wheelhouse recently. Now we have passel. Come on. Okay. We're expanding our vocabulary on the show.
Listen to this show and you will get it's a large group of people or things of indeterminate number.
Put this on in the passel that's out on my horse.
P-A-S-S-E-L. I don't know if it's a cowboy term, but it is a real word. I didn't make that up.
I knew that word.
It's not even slang.
A passel of pomegranate hot dogs.
Passel.
See? Yes.
Passel.
Passel.
Yep.
You are a passel.
You're a passel. So where were we? Oh, passel of money. What was it? $270 million in the last quarter? Something like that?
I think it was more than that.
More than that.
I don't know. Yeah. It's an endless money pit, Bing. Yeah.
So you can buy. Look, you can.
I'm sorry. It's an endless investment.
Oh, sorry. That is a distinction. That's a distinction. Yeah. Oh,
okay.
But no, I think you can buy market share and search, but the question is, when does it turn?
Bing, of course, is a mixed bag. Obviously, the Bing share has grown a little bit. A lot of it comes from Yahoo. I think the big missing or the big question mark here is what happens if Yahoo goes to the wrong people and they decide to redo that search deal with somebody else, which you could picture Google being very interested in. They've done some good stuff, but unfortunately for Bing, I mean, I know that Bing tries to sort of aim itself as being not the same as Google. Like we're going for these vertical searches. We do these things well, you know, people don't like to think like that. I think that's the problem. You know, you don't want to have to think, well, I want to do this kind of search, so I think I will use Bing for this. You know, it just needs to be better all around. And unfortunately there always has to be a second player and maybe a third player. And that's, you know, kind of where they are, but this is a little awful, but it falls into that category of it's this thing that's like this other thing, but it's not the thing that everyone's thinking of. And, you know, they're always going to have that stigma. It's interesting. There's somebody on Twitter, and maybe some somebodies, who keep asking for Microsoft to, I don't know if you've seen this, Mary Jo, rebrand a lot of their Windows Live stuff as Bing. So they want Bing Mail, you know.
Oh, really?
Like, wow. I like that.
Like Hotmail, I would use Hotmail if they would just call it Bing Mail.
I would. I like Bing Mail. That's a good idea.
Windows phone, the Bing phone.
Bing phone, yeah. Bing me.
Why not? Bing is a great brand, I think, potentially a great brand.
It is a good brand.
I'm sure they did the check to make sure it doesn't mean penis in Chinese and all that.
Yeah, they're not Rim Leo, but they they could bring back that guy Chandler from Friends. He could do the ads. You know.
Oh, man. Well, let's say why we think it's a good thing, since we've already said why we think it's a bad thing.
Why is being a good thing?
I mean, it's a good thing that they didn't lose market share this year, right? They actually gained because of their deal with Yahoo. They stayed, if you combine the two, right around 29 to 30% of the search market. That's good. Another good thing is they're integrating Bing into more of their own products, like Windows Phone, Bing integrated right in there. The Kinect Xbox thing, you know, Bing Batman, that's another good thing. So you're starting to see them actually use their own technology and integrate it into other products. That's a plus.
I think that's the Xbox stuff is really funny because I don't believe there's any way to do an actual internet search from the Xbox 360 using Bing. But they call it Bing because it's almost like they're trying to create their own version of Kleenex. You know, we want people to see Bing and think search. And I think that's smart. You know, put it into a popular product like the Xbox 360. Yeah, you put it on the Windows Phone. It becomes part of the whole ecosystem. So I like that. I think that's a good move.
Moving along. Yes. We're gonna make a quick work of this. Compete. Yep. Is that another product? Compete?
Microsoft Compete 2011 Essentials Enterprise Edition.
That's Tom Rizzo's nickname, Compete.
Is it really?
Tom Compete Rizzo, it should be.
Who's Tom Rizzo? Is he the man in charge of competition?
He's a general manager, is he, on the Office/Office 365 team? I believe his job is just to be unleashed occasionally to rip into Google publicly. And he's very entertaining and he's very, very thought-provoking as well. I mean, I like the guy a lot, but he comes out every once in a while and, just kind of dumps on Google, which is great because this is the way Microsoft used to be, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It got him into some trouble, obviously. You gotta rein it in somewhat, but this is the way Microsoft is not enough now. And he's an example of where they are this way. And I love it. I love him for it. And I love that he does it. And he just doesn't hold back, you know? He is relentless in his attacks on Google. And I think it's fantastic. And it's very apt. And fortunately for him, I guess, the products that he's talking about are very good products. And they're out in the market now and they're doing well. And there you go. So I'd like to see more Tom Rizzos at Microsoft. I think every group at Microsoft needs that guy.
You saw a little more of that, too, from a couple other teams. The head of Microsoft's law team took the gloves off a couple times this year, too, and basically debunked some of the things that Google was saying around Android and patents. And he also went on the offensive.
Frank Shaw's doing some of this stuff, too.
Frank Shaw, who's the head of corporate communications.
Yes, absolutely. That's good stuff. And I can't really say who did this, but I will say that twice in the past few months, I have privately had conversations with people, one case from Windows Live and one case from Windows, where they kind of did this thing in private where they said, look, we hear what you're saying. We know you have complaints. Here's what we're doing about it. We can't talk about it quite yet. But in both cases, I was appreciative of the fact that they kind of reached out to me to talk to me about something that was, I felt in both cases was very important. And they did it privately in this case because they're just not ready with, you know, whatever they're working on. But, and then you see some of this stuff publicly. So I think there's an effort. I don't think it's a concerted effort, but I think there are people at Microsoft who really do give a crap. And I think people forget that sometimes. It's this big faceless corporation and those guys are there. And, you know, we need more of this. I think this stuff is good.
Competition. It's a good thing. At least, you know what? It's not competition. It's a hunger. It's a belief.
You don't just sit there and, right,
in what we're doing.
Right.
And we're good.
When Windows Vista came out and Apple was relentlessly going after them on those ads.
Right.
Many of them, which were just factually incomplete. I mean, absolutely. Right. I'm sorry. Incorrect. What did they do? You know, they just sat there and took it again and again, smack to the face, you know? I was incensed by this. I complained to them again and again and again. You have got to do something about this. You can't just let them dominate the discussion.
Yeah.
And of course, then they called me on that, and they said, "Okay, great, genius. What do you want me to do about it?" You
know? Do they really? They
called. Like, whoa! Yeah. I don't. I'm sorry. I am a professional critic. I don't have answers.
What are you talking about?
I just have complaints.
Are
we done here? Because yeah. I don't have any.
Speaking of Apple, in a weird way, Microsoft teamed up with Apple this year, buying Nortel for $6 billion, and it was really the Nortel patents that they bought.
People feel very strongly about patents. I'll tell you this, from Microsoft's standpoint, patents were a big win in 2011.
Yeah. And, they're making more money on Android than anybody.
I was going to say, I don't mean it from a lawsuit perspective. I mean it from the notion that between $5 and $10 per unit, probably, of every Android device sold goes to Microsoft.
Unbelievable.
By the way, can I throw it crazy? We don't have like predictions for the year here, but let me throw out a crazy, crazy backroom prediction. If Windows Phone completely tanks in the marketplace, one possible out for Microsoft would be to license Android and just put the Windows Phone UI on top of it for their own phone.
They could do a better job, really.
Why not? Amazon did it with the Fire.
What's happening? Some are saying this exactly, that what's happening with Android, the future of Android, is these completely skinned, like the Fire.
The best versions of Android are the ones that are not identifiable as Android.
Exactly. Right? I mean, exactly.
That to me shows there's an opportunity. Possibility.
If Microsoft makes $10, well, let's say $5 per phone, in 2 days on Christmas. There were 3.7 million Android activations on December 24th and 25th. They made, almost $2 million. What was it? No, I mean, sorry, five times 3.7 is $20 million in 2 days. Just nothing, just sitting there. The check comes.
That's a hell of a war Christmas party right there.
$20 million. It's just change.
You sold $20 million of something. Let's celebrate
for nothing. And if they make 10, twice that was 40 million.
Yeah, patents, baby.
2 days. Patents. And I'm one of the most strong critics of this whole patent thing. But that's patents.
I'm telling you, when this company's long gone, the husk of its former shell, all that patents. Will be left will be this thing. And I bet they make millions and millions of dollars a year.
IBM. All you have to do is say IBM. That's what IBM has so many patents. And that really is a lifeline for them. Xbox Live
That's all they are.
Yeah.
Wait till that's all they focus on.
Well, Nathan Myhrvold.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God, please. Yeah. Jeez.
You need say no more.
Say no more. Say no more.
He might be the Antichrist.
Xbox Live number 9 latest update gives Microsoft a decent TV play.
Yeah, I don't think that any of these standalone devices are ever going to amount to anything meaningful as a market. I think that the few, I wonder, when Steve Jobs infamously was quoted in his book as saying, we finally cracked it. I don't think that what he cracked was TV the way we think of it. And people are talking about Apple's going to come up with a TV set, I think the thing to crack, and maybe Apple did, hopefully they did, was what they cracked was the relationships with the cable companies,
right?
That these guys were so afraid of Microsoft 15 years ago that they refused to work with Microsoft on these cable boxes. And now, of course, you know how these things have gone. They're awful. What if Apple got in there, or Microsoft? I mean, what if one of these companies got in there at that level where they did the guide? And you could right-click on, however you do it. You select some show and you want to record it, but it's half over and there are no further recordings coming or further shows to record. And then one of the options could be buy it on iTunes or on Xbox Live or whatever. That kind of thing would be amazing. So I think Microsoft has established the Xbox 360 as a viable alternative to Apple TV and the Roku and all those devices. I think it's actually superior in many ways. But to take this thing to the next level, some further form of integration, I think it's provided, is required.
And finally, IE, Internet Explorer, in the victory column.
IE for the win.
They finally got rid of IE 5.5 and 6, or at least made a strong move away from that platform. And they've all IE 9. Although I have to say, and this is a big disappointment to me, twit.tv does not work on IE 9.
Really?
Not good.
Oh. Bad.
We're not hiring that company again.
Ooh.
Well,
twit.tv does not work.
Are you using IE9? Go to twit.tv.
You're talking about the live 12.
Not live.twit.tv, twit.tv. So, people tell me it breaks. Somebody told me it crashes IE9, which is totally our fault, not the IE9's fault, I think.
That's why in our win category, we're talking more IE6 here than we're talking IE9, actually. We're talking about Microsoft finally really starting to put pressure on people to get rid of IE6. I mean, it's their doing. It's their product. But, you know, they launched a campaign to eradicate IE6, and now they're going to have the auto updates trying to get people off of IE6 and move them up at least to, like, IE7 or IE8. If they're on XP, they can't go to IE9. So that's a good thing. You know, it's finally, they're the ones who need to get rid of this thing. They built it. They got to get rid of it.
And, you broke it, you buy it.
You broke it, you buy it. Right, exactly. Yep. So that's a plus.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, IE doesn't get a lot of respect. Obviously, it's still very widely used. And I think Microsoft deserves some credit for moving the web browser market away from this thing where developers look at browser versions and then provide different versions of the website based on that, and instead move it to a future where the browser is pulled for features. Instead, that we're going to worry less about these versions. You know, some people have made a lot out of, like, you know, Chrome is apparently on version 117 or whatever they're on right now, and it really doesn't matter, because as a user, you don't see the version number anyway. The version number doesn't mean anything.
Right.
It's really just what the thing can do.
Right.
And really, Microsoft is doing a good job with that kind of stuff. So I like what they're doing.
Business users an opt out. Don't forget, because not everybody wants it.
Right. Right.
And the fine hala in the
bottom five,
the bottom five, the losers,
let's pluck through that.
And ironically, and we didn't plan it this way. No, Internet Explorer is also on this list.
On the losers list.
So in what respect, is it on the losers list in this regard?
Well, they're losing market share. Actually.
Oh, they are losing.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. And Chrome is really putting it to them. I got to say, as I've said on the show this year, I'm a Chrome user now, and I was an IE user forever. And Chrome just works better for me on Windows 7. I've had a lot of problems with IE9. And it's, you know, it's good that Microsoft's getting on the standards bandwagon. In fact, are actually leading the standards bandwagon in a lot of respects right now. But they're losing market share because Chrome is doing more, I'd say, of what people want, which is delivering a lightweight, fast browser.
Yeah, so, I have the same experience on Windows 8 and then Windows 7, where I literally just did this. I switched my browser back to IE. I make it the default. I use it for a couple of days. And I hit something where, like, okay, this doesn't work the way I want it to. Like, well, let me try to get around that. And then I hit another one. And eventually you have enough of these where you say, you know what? And you go back to Chrome, and, like, all these problems go away. You know, everything just works. And I think the benefit of the way Chrome is doing things, again, this kind of version of RAMA thing they're doing, is they're continually improving and updating it. And Microsoft has really done a lot to improve their process for updating the browser. But ultimately, they're still kind of tied to this old-fashioned model of milestones and long release cycles. And IE10 is tied to Windows 8. And it's just not there, you know, it's just not there. So they're doing a better job, but, you know, there's a reason that Chrome has made such big gains in the past year or two, especially. And there are reasons that IE is losing market share, and it's just not going to change. You know, Microsoft comes out with this email every month and a blog post where they talk about browser market share. And I always call it making lemonade, because they always try to show the good little piece, like IE9 usage on Windows 7 is up again, you know. Yes, but overall IE usage is down again and has been every single month this year. You know, it's just the way it goes. So it's kind of a tough one.
Yeah. Also, tablets, although you could put this on the list every year for the last 10 years.
Well, that doesn't disqualify it.
Well, we could retire
it's a golden,
it. Could,
it's a golden old.
You could retire it. Like, you know, okay, it's a given.
It's like that, you know, the hit song from 3 years ago that's somehow still in the Hot 100.
Right.
You don't know why it's still there, but, it never, you know.
Right.
I meant to go back and look this up. I probably should still do this. But, you know, 2 years ago at CES, Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer stood up on the stage and he made some proclamations about tablets. And
somebody made a compilation, I don't remember who it was, of all of Steve Ballmer's proclamations from his CES keynotes. And you couldn't even call
it. Not batting 1,000.
You couldn't even call it checkered.
Yeah.
It's, he held up the HP tablet, right?
Yeah.
How many did they sell of those?
Like 15 minutes on the web, I think. It was like, longer than they sold WebOS, but
right.
Not much.
Well, I don't know. I think you could argue WebOS was a bigger success than the HP Windows tablet.
Yeah, we'll see. We're going to look back in a couple of years and we'll see. But
yeah, maybe. Maybe it's not over yet.
No.
I just... Yeah.
But tablets, yeah. Tablets, a lot of people ask me, why didn't they get a Windows 8 tablet to market sooner? This question comes in all the time through email and Twitter and everything else. And I really think they thought Windows 7 on tablets was going to be okay, which is kind of crazy since it's not a touch-optimized operating system. It's too heavy an operating system to be on a tablet. There are people who have Windows 7 tablets and who love them. I hear from them, but it wasn't the right operating system. And to try to kind of shoehorn it into a tablet, it just made things worse. And they were pricey, they were bulky, no battery life. I mean, the list just goes on and on about what was wrong with Windows 7 tablets.
One word, in my opinion, stylus.
You're going to still have that on Windows 8, so.
I know, but I think you can really, this is what Steve Jobs, I think this was the flag he put in the sand. He said, we're never going to do a tablet that requires a stylus.
Well, requires a stylus, right. Yeah. I bet one of the top, 50 electronic gadgets of the year was those smart pen things, so people still write. I mean, I don't, I've been typing for so long that my handwriting is actually unsustainable. I can't even sign my full name without my hand cramping up. I just can't write with a pen anymore. Maybe that's not the case for younger people or people who are still writing or whatever. But
no, younger people can't write at all. They have no handwriting.
Okay.
They write like children.
Well, of course.
Like 3-year-old children.
So, yeah, I mean, it's sad. We're probably going to go to some future where, they're not teaching script. We must have talked about this in the podcast, right?
Like, right.
There's going to be a situation where, to my children even.
It's crazy to teach.
They will look.
Spend any time at all in the classroom on cursive. Well,
except for one thing. I have a letter that my mother might have written to me back when I was in high school that's 6 pages long on pieces of paper. And I could hand it to my children today, and it might as well be written in Egyptian hieroglyphics. They will have no idea says because she used cursive.
Well, sorry. Times change. Maybe you could type it in and email it to them.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just – no, of course. Of course times change. Yeah. I know.
People hold their pens with their fists now, and they go,
They stab the pen. Yeah.
Now, this is an interesting number 8, the word relevance. And I think this is something we've talked about all year long.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it is something, I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, why the stock price is still flat. Just the sense, wrong or right, that Microsoft is not relevant.
My parents-in-law were looking to buy a new computer recently. And I had this weird kind of out-of-body experience where in talking to them, it occurred to me they have never once even briefly considered anything other than a Windows computer.
Right.
Of course, they're like 65 years old, so,
But those people are fewer and fewer.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I mean. In other words, and it makes me think of younger people who are coming up in the world, in school now or in college or whatever. And to them, technology is Apple and Google and Facebook and smartphones and online services. And the problem is this is not an audience that Microsoft can ever win. I really feel like once people go down those roads, you don't win people like that back. They're dead to you. And that's a problem. That's a big problem. It's a theme that I've had for the years we've been doing the show where I worry about that. I worry about those people because Microsoft is a non-entity to them. And I don't see how that changes. Windows 8's not going to change that. Windows Phone is not going to change that. You may never get those people back.
You also...
The related audience is startups, right? I mean, the other audience they don't really have mind share and traction with are people who are doing startups. And that's what the whole BizSpark program that they launched is about. And having people located in the Valley to try to kind of put a Microsoft face on the Valley. So they're trying things, but I agree with you on this one. This is huge. Whenever I'm at a family gathering, I'm the only Windows person.
Are you still right about Microsoft? How those guys are still around?
Yeah, are they still around?
People say that. Yep.
Are they still in business? You see all the time now the picture. I see it on social networks and everything. My first day at work at startup XYZ, I'll use Facebook, and it's always the same. It's the Apple laptop, the iPhone, and the Apple screen. Actually, Facebook gives you a Dell screen because they're cheap. But it's not
connected to a Mac.
Connected to a Mac.
Sure.
And you see it at every startup. Relevance is an interesting issue, and it's one we will probably continue to cover. Now, here's one I didn't think of, Paul. I'd like you to explain Xbox Live Gold, which I own. I bought the $99 one-year Xbox Live Gold.
This is my cause du jour, I guess.
Will I not be renewing?
No, you will be, because you have to. You know, you need it for certain things.
For Netflix.
Right, which is the problem. So they have all these TV and entertainment services now on Xbox Live. All of them require a gold subscription. The reason that's a problem is many of these are subscriptions that you're already paying for somewhere else. Right. And if you access those subscriptions on other devices, you don't pay yet again on those devices.
Right.
So if you want to use Netflix on an Apple TV, the cost to you is zero, other than the cost of your Netflix subscription. Right. Cost to you on the Xbox 360 is $60 a year.
Yep.
I don't see how they get away with that. In fact, they raised the price on Xbox Live Gold last year, which I find amazing. Don't these things get cheaper over time? I mean, as you know, you build out the infrastructure and you figure out how it works and you get more efficient and all that. They're the only major general purpose video game service on Earth that is paid for. This is the only one. You don't pay for the PlayStation Network. You don't pay for Steam. I don't understand. You don't pay for Xbox Live on Windows. You only pay for it on the Xbox.
Nobody would pay for Steam. That's just a nutty idea.
Yeah, no, of course not. It's the infrastructure. For some reason, again, the Xbox 360 is Microsoft's golden product. You know, you can't criticize it, even when 95% of them are going back with warranty replacement. You know, Red Ring of Death 2 years ago. How are we paying for this? It's crazy. But they get it because it's a captive audience.
Right.
I think it stinks.
And as long as people keep buying it, they're going to keep selling it, right? I mean, didn't they have record number of Xbox Live Gold subscriptions?
It's awful. It makes me crazy.
It's awful.
It should be free.
It's awful. Finally, our last item in the worst list and our last item for the day.
Well, except for we have a bonus item that should have made the list.
Okay.
But we'll get to that.
No, we should have, we'll have a bonus.
We do.
We have bonus item. Bonus item still to come, but speed and execution. That's got to be Mary Jo. What does that mean?
Actually, Paul, but...
Oh, God.
It was hard to tell because we merged our list. But he made some great points in our notes. You know, whenever I think of this item, speed and execution, I think of Windows Live. Because this year we saw a surprising number of Windows Live updates for Hotmail and for SkyDrive. That was really good. But what about Windows Live Essentials?
Yeah.
Anybody? Yeah. Anybody? It's been years. Well, you know, like, this is a service.
What is Windows Live Essentials part of now?
Yeah. Windows Live Essentials. Yeah. It's a bundle of add-on services for Windows.
They fall into services. Windows.
It's turned into the plus into pack.
Right.
Yeah, but they're under the veil of silence. That is my point. I mean, it's
right
because they're part of Windows. Because the next version is ostensibly part of Windows 8.
Yeah, but SkyDrive and Hotmail are parts of the Windows Live Empire too, right? I just feel like if you have something that's not in the operating system, that it's an add-on service. The whole point of having a service is it's something you can update frequently and regularly, and it kind of defeats the purpose if you do it once every 3 years.
That is exactly the point.
Yes.
I think you were in the right. I think we talked about this in the podcast, but I believe you were there at the day of the Windows 7 launch. We were up in that hotel room in New York. And
that's right, yeah.
Whoever it was from Microsoft came by, was going on and on and on about how great Windows Live was, and because we pulled it out of Windows, and now we can update it, blah, 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 it's so great. And I can't help myself. You know, I said, well, I don't mean to be the stink bomb in the room, but the fact that you removed it from Windows so you can make it update more quickly is fantastic, but you never actually have done that.
You never do update.
And he said, well, what are you talking about? You know, and I said, well, before you updated it on this schedule, but since you've been separate from Windows, you've updated it on the same exact schedule. Never. You know, I mean, so, and here we are again, and it's the same thing. We're still, why has there not been a release of Windows Live Essentials every single year? Just like there's one of iLife, whether they need it or not. Although I realize
no, there hasn't been now. Yeah.
Okay. But that's because it's matured. Mm-hmm. In other words, these are products that integrate with online services, but they sit on your computer. They need to be updated badly in some cases.
I agree.
And they just sit there stale and it stinks. Yep. And it's not, like Mary just said, that's not the point of doing it this way was so it wouldn't be like this. Yep.
And it's not that they can't do it either. I mean, they're updating Windows Azure and Office 365 every 3 months. Those are enterprise products. They're huge. I mean, and they're updating them every 3 months. So why can't we do this on the consumer side?
Presumably, they've got hundreds of people working on it. They must be doing something.
Well, they must. I agree. They must.
We just don't know. We just don't know what. All right, you said there was a bonus item to wrap this puppy up that put a bow on our year-ender for 2011.
I'm referring, of course, to Hadoop. Which I could not tell you what
Hadoop
is.
When we did our list, Paul's like, no Hadoop?
What is Hadoop?
Hadoop.
Somebody made Hadoop. What was the comment on Twitter about Mary Jo should be like, Or Mary Jo is to Hadoop as I am to Call of Duty, and that, you know, she needs like some achievement unlocked, you know, some kind of capability where she achieves some kind of prestige status for Hadoop.
So Hadoop is going to be on next year's list because it's a 2012 deliverable. Don't forget it, guys. It's going to be on there.
Just remember, whatever the hell it is, you heard it here first. Hadoop.
This is why she's here.
Hadoop for
because
2012.
I don't think I would have ever mentioned it.
Well,
not even in passing.
Did Microsoft buy Hadoop?
I don't know, Leo.
No, they partnered. they're partnering with a company called Hortonworks to do a version of Hadoop for Windows.
Hadoop is an open source project, but the problem
big
with
data.
Hadoop, it's got a lot of it's big data, but it's got a lot of bugs and it's doesn't you know it's crashes.
And is Horton the elephant that heard a who?
Horton heard a who?
Yes.
So what's happening? It's sad to say in the Hadoop world is there are all these closed, you know, all these proprietary versions, these forks of Hadoop. To make it work.
But Microsoft's going to give theirs back to the open source community.
Yay.
So they're actually going to try to fix it.
Fix that.
Microsoft
fix
is
huge.
All about giving back. So
yes. They've always have been.
Oh, no. I just got a message on Twitter. You guys are depressing me with this episode.
No, this is good.
No, we said a lot of good things, too. There were 10 pluses and 10 minuses.
Yeah.
It was a mixed bag. That was supposed to be what it was.
All year in review is always that. I mean, on This Week in Google.
It is a time of reflection.
We list all of Eric Schmidt's faux pas, you know? I mean, it's just, you know, it's a time of reflection.
I saw a great blog post, I think by Brian S. Hall, that said, what if Eric Schmidt's off-the-cuff comments were all official Google policy? Like, what if we just took him at his word? Like, this is what Google does. It would be like a James Bond villain. You know, it would be like the craziest company on earth.
It is. And it might be. Paul Thurrott is the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. He's a news editor for Windows IT Pro. Believe it or not, he has enterprise credentials. And of course, he is the author of Windows Phone Secrets, which is a great book, a must-have book if you're a Windows Phone user. Mary Jo Foley writes about Microsoft each and every minute in her jammies. Do you have feet on the jammies for those cold New York mornings?
I do.
Good. And you'll find all of those at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Thank you, guys. It's been a great year. I look forward to another wonderful year, 2012. Talking about the Big M. There's nothing to say. That's it. Okay, thank you. Happy New Year. Have a great New Year. And we'll figure out what we're going to do for CES, and we'll let everybody know. Just follow the Twit calendar at twit.tv, unless, of course, you're using IE9, in which case you're just out of luck. Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.